Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers, locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, let's go. Thursday night, are you kidding me? The intensity, I can just feel it today. I mean, through the humidity, through the Jacksonville heat. Just out of this world. Day two in the books, OTAs. 2019, another very good one for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, I'm always a glass half full type of guy. When it comes to Jaguars training camp, I mean, this, of course, being the OTA. And it's really weird because I think I'm more of a cynic than anything when it comes to sports and my teams. I'm much more of a survivor and getting through the next round or next game and just being kind of the deep breath if you get a win compared to just being a miserable human being if a club loses. You know, you break me down. You take a look at my DNA, that's what I have. I fully admit that. Yet, for some reason, during the offseason for the Jags, I have always been such a proponent, such a positive influence of this organization, and I'm not sure why that is. Some of you may say, well, you're on the payroll, but well, I did that long before I was on the payroll. I think it's because they're professional football players, and they're very good at what they do. Even those who you out there as Jaguar fans, as pro football fans, and we in the media will say, you suck. Well, when you suck in the NFL, guess what? You're still really, really good. You're the best of the bunch. I mean, what is 1% of the kids who make it into college, make it to the NFL? And what's the life expectancy of an NFL career? It's around 3 years. So even the really, really bad is still good. And when you're practicing and you're not hitting, and when you're going, I don't want to say go through the motions, because this is their craft, this is their profession, and they're putting in the work, they look good. Nick Foles today looks really, really good. I mean, he's throwing spirals on that practice field. I haven't seen that in about 5 years. Frankly, I haven't seen that since Blaine Gabbert. Case in point for yours truly. You know? Based on what I saw Blaine Gabbert and Rashard Jennings do during that training camp, what was it, 6 years ago, 7 years ago? I don't know. They all run together for me. I would have put both of those two into the Hall of Fame. I'll never forget that training camp. Gabbert made every throw available. Rashard Jennings, I thought, was going to make people forget about Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew. He was that good that one August going back a few years ago. That's just the way it is. But I'm excited. As a matter of fact, I'm thrilled. You know, I just love getting out there, watching these guys work. 2 days in the book, another big day tomorrow, and then they'll break for the three-day weekend, have back at it on Tuesday. Therefore, we got a lot to do tonight. It is Into the Night. My name is Rick Ballew. We're going to go until 9 o'clock. Going to spend a lot of time today talking about Nick Foles, who, I mean, his presentation, and that's the word I'm going to use, was just outstanding today. I mean, everyone wins the press conference. For crying out loud, Jared Odrick won the freaking press conference. All right? He's arguably the biggest turd that Jacksonville has had. Well, I don't know, maybe Chris Clemens. Oh, I mean, you know what I'm saying. But Jared Odrick won the press conference. Everyone wins the press conference. Doesn't matter if it's a new coach, a new coordinator, a new player. That's just the way it is. Fresh start. Clean slate, grabbing the bull by the horns. You know, that's what you get. Everyone's a winner there. You know, Blackman did it. Justin Blackman looked us in the eyes and told us that he would not make this mistake again. Give us another chance. Give me another chance. Looked right at us, okay? Grown man lying. Everyone wins the press conference. But today with Nick Foles, it was a presentation. Wow, was I ever wrong? And I ran into some of those people today, Bo, by the way. It's been an interesting week. If you're joining us here and you don't get to listen often at night, kind of identify people in the business world, and that includes the media. All right, you have the high first guys out there, and a couple of members of the media today, in fact, pulled me aside and asked me if I was a high first guy. If you don't know what a high first guy is, that's no matter where you are, no matter what your line of work is, you can be in a three-piece suit in a business, or you can be in a ditch digging a hole. But you're approached by someone else in the biz, and the high first guy simply would never acknowledge you or even wave or nod or certainly not say hi unless you say what's up or what's going on. You have to initiate it. Those are the high first guys. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about the never wrong guys. Okay? Marcel Darius could be cut tonight. You'd have members of the Jacksonville media who would say, I knew that was going to happen. They're the never wrong guys. Okay? I'm not afraid to admit that I was wrong. I didn't like the Nick Foles signing. I don't know why I go back to it. I don't know why I'm beating myself up. I wanted a rookie. I wanted Dwayne Haskins. I thought that was the best move for the organization. They put their faith, they put their money in Nick Foles, and he's killing it. Now, he hadn't done anything yet. None of this matters. But his presentation today was about as great as anything I have ever seen. He has fully taken over the leadership of this offense. 30 years of age, a Super Bowl, a Super Bowl MVP, an enormous amount of money. He's a good guy. He comes across as your neighbor, you know, checking some mail. What do you got? Bills, checks, no bill. He's like a friendly neighbor. He's a good dude. Doesn't take himself too seriously. Actually embraces feedback, including criticism. The interview I did on Tuesday with DJ Chark, who's getting ready for his second year. The guy missed five games with a quad a year ago. So, you know, he's played, what, 10 games, 11 games in his NFL career. And during a five-minute interview, he tells me that Nick Foles wants to hear criticism from him or wants him to critique what he is doing as a quarterback. Can you imagine? I just think, did Kirk Cousins do that last year in Minnesota? Did Sam Bradford do that last year when they gave him $20 million to go out to the West Coast? You know, did Fitzy do that when he landed in Tampa a couple of years ago? Is Fitzy doing that now in Miami? Did McCown do that when he showed up in New York? Did Tyrod Taylor do that a year ago when he went to Cleveland? Did Teddy Bridgewater do that when he went to New York before he was traded and was clearly the backup to New Orleans? I mean, I would think that that's really not the way that quarterbacks act, veteran quarterbacks act. But that's the way that Nick Foles is acting. And today he was asked about running this offense, the difference now between his relationship with John DeFilippo and how much the offense changes here compared to the way that he had it in Philadelphia. And we have comments coming up from both the offensive coordinator and the quarterback on that. And you know what else is pretty cool? Is that their answers are similar. So what that says to me is one thing and one thing only. They're on the right page. They're thinking alike. They're not trying to make us think one way and then perhaps show us something else. Obviously, they've had lengthy conversations about what this football team is going to try to do. One of the questions I asked John DeFilippo today, and we're going to run that back for you coming up in about 10 minutes, this offense tailed by 11 points a year ago. I mean, that is an absolute abomination. I would really have to put in serious work here and go back and do some research. But I'd love to know the last time an offense went backwards by nearly 11 points in scoring the way that the Jaguars did from 2017 to 2018. 60 minutes in 16 games and you averaged 10.8 points less each and every Sunday? It just doesn't work that way, okay? And obviously one of the reasons he brings up is injuries, and we all know that. We all know that the Jaguars had injuries. But to drop off by more than a touchdown and a field goal overall in total scoring, that's the way that this football team went. I think there's a lot of conversation and there's a lot of interest in where the defense is right now. I think the defense is still far and away good enough to get you into the playoffs. Are they as dominant as they were 2 years ago? No. They wouldn't have made position coaches changes if that was the case. And obviously a lot of the personnel is now gone. Now, you just look at the guys who are no longer here, beginning with Puz Lussie. Now you had Telvin. And then you go to Dante Fowler, and you go to Malik Jackson, and you go to Gibson, you go to Church, you also go to Colvin. And that's what, six guys, maybe seven guys that you've lost out of your top 13, 14 in a rotation from the 2017 AFC Championship team. John DeFilippo had a lot of very interesting things to say today. So didn't Nick Foles. So I thought it was another outstanding workout for the Jaguars, and I'm going to talk a lot about that this afternoon. The one issue that is slightly alarming, is the word I'll use, is Josh Allen. And it was a bruised knee, and they're holding him out. They're just being cautious. I'm not going to lie, I hate it. I do. One practice and an injury. Oof. Now, he was durable at Kentucky now. There's no doubt about that. But I hate that for the track record because I'm thinking about injuries that this football team has had to endure the last couple of years. And I think of a guy like Marquise Lee who had soft tissue injury and never really got untracked early in his career. I'm going to mention Blackman twice in the opening. He always seemed to have some hamstring problems. Fournette has never really been able to stay healthy for a 16-game season outside of 1 year at LSU. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on when you look at injuries that have happened here with this football team. And all of a sudden, here comes Josh Allen. He has one practice, and now he's out with a bruised knee. Didn't go today, won't go tomorrow. Okay? I'm not overreacting here. He could be fine and play 16 games. All I'm simply saying is I hate this story. I mean, I do. It just drives me crazy because I hate thinking that maybe this organization is a little bit snake bit when it comes to some of their higher draft picks over the last two, three, four, some odd seasons. And, you know, there has been some bad luck. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Congratulations to Josh Allen. Oh, by the way, he did sign his contract today, seventh pick overall in the first round. He is now a very rich man. All right, we got a lot to do. We are going to go until 9 o'clock. I want to come back, and I want to talk about John DeFilippo, and I want to talk about Nick Foles. Both met the media today. We have plenty of sound from that press conference, or both press conferences. DeFilippo was in the morning, and Foles, his presentation was just out of this world. I mean, I just can't believe how wrong I was with my opinion to go with Dwayne Haskins. Now, that's subject to change depending on how Foles plays and how Haskins plays. But right now, he's kind of turned me 180 degrees, and he's done that in two practices. That's how sharp he has looked on the practice field. He's looked that good. And Westbrook returned today. He looked good. Chark has looked good. Connelly, I mean, they look like they have some weapons. They really do. All right, so let's. I'll try to calm down a little bit. I mean, I know people probably aren't used to this. You like me being more of an upset middle-aged man. I just can't get there, not by watching what I have over the last 2 days. We got a ton to do tonight. Glad you're with us. Coming up, Nick Foles, John DeFilippo. Let's talk about Thursday's OTA right here into the night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Thank you to Advanced Disposal, our sponsor tonight. They're hiring in Clay County. That includes a $1,500 signing bonus. You need a CDL. That's a commercial driver's license. And it's good for $1,500. Very competitive pay. Outstanding benefits. Apply online. Go to AdvancedDisposal.com/careers. Marcel Darius was not spotted today at practice. Not believed to be injury related, but he was not there. Okay, Jalen's not there. I think we're at the point now where we're not even mentioning Telvin Smith anymore. I mean, he's not there. Jake Ryan, a linebacker, worked inside today along with Cam Robinson and defensive lineman Lyndon Johnson. On the side today, Marquise Lee and Benny Cunningham. All right, the return today of D.D. Westbrook. And he made a couple of splash plays during today's workout. I think the wide receiving core has been better than I expected. Now, I spent a lot of time Tuesday, on DJ Chark because Westbrook was out and Lee is on the sideline. Therefore, in my opinion, he was the best wide receiver of the group. Chris Connolly's done a couple of nice things. I'm going to get to him in just a moment. But you watch Foles, and there's a lot that he brings to the table. Certainly the command, the leadership, but you know his ability to do a lot of different things with the football. And the accuracy that we have spent all offseason discussing, 10 yards or less, throwing to the tight end, throwing to the back, something that remains my biggest concern offensively for this football team, who is going to catch the ball out of the backfield. But also we see Foles extending it a little bit and throwing it downfield and, you know, seeing a nice ball, seeing a spiral. It's a noticeable difference compared to what we've seen around here the last 5 years with Blake Bortles. I mean, the simple eye test tells you that there is a difference between these two quarterbacks. And that should be reflective in the fact that this man has won a Super Bowl. But anyway, I thought he killed it today, and it was a very good afternoon for Nick Foles. All right, let's get to him right now. He had a lot of interesting things to say, did Nick. We'll share some of those with you. I mentioned Chris Conley, and, you know, their relationship goes back a few years. Some of you out there listening may forget that they played together in Kansas City. And, you know, Conley's been kind of forgotten, I think, in some measures here. Probably because he wasn't really showcased in Kansas City after being a workout warrior. Remember seeing him at the combine, just how incredible he was. On top of that, last year the Jaguars spent $9.6 million on Dante Moncrief, which ended up being a disaster. This year, I want to see the money spent on Chris Conley was $1.8 million. I'll have to recheck that. But I believe that's the number. So this is a show-me year, and $1.8 million is pretty good money for you and I. But for NFL football players, it's not. All right? Not when you have a large pool of wide receivers coming into the NFL from the NFL draft each and every season. $1.8 is far below what I'm sure he thinks he's worth now that he's getting ready to play in his fifth year. So I asked Nick about the offense, and I asked him about Chris Conley and their relationship going back to Kansas City.
Back with Chris Conley, you know, didn't get a lot of at-bats in Kansas City. How much is that a factor here for him now? What's his drive, in your opinion, to come out this year and really do something?
You know, Chris is a guy I've always loved and admired, and we've always been good friends, especially in my time in KC. We just meshed real well. So I'm grateful that he's here. I'm grateful that I get to play with him. I know they miss him in Kansas City. They just have a lot of guys there. And Chris is a guy who can play at the highest level. He's a guy that, you know, can, you know, get the ball a lot and make a lot of plays. The thing that I, you know, admire from being his teammate and watching him from afar is, you know, even if he's playing or he's not playing, like, he's the same guy. They needed him last year to step in, and what do you have, 5 touchdowns and, you know, 300 and some yards? He was there. He was ready to go in a high-powered offense. You know, some guys, you know, they would shut it down because I'm not getting balls. He's not that guy. He's a team guy. He loves his teammates. He can impact a room by the character and the person he is, and we're very fortunate to have a guy like him on this roster.
I love prove-it guys. I love prove-it years. I don't like using the word reclamation project. I don't believe that when you're talking about an athlete, you should go down the road of someone else's trash is, or someone's trash is someone else's treasure. I think that's kind of Bush, but I've heard that used to describe guys getting a second opportunity. I love the fresh start. I do. I love a guy who I believe feels much maligned about the way things went in Kansas City. Now, I don't know this. I've yet to speak with Chris, and I'm looking forward to it. Tomorrow, by the way, Jeff Swaim, going to talk with him. That'll be part of Friday night's show. And, hey, let me tell you, he's looked outstanding so far. And I'm not just saying that because I'm speaking with him tomorrow. I asked to speak to him based on what I saw Tuesday and Thursday. Very impressed with Jeff Swaim. More so right now than Josh Oliver, but that's expected. Oliver's a third-round draft pick out of Murray State. Oliver has freakish ability, and he's got a body. He's got to learn how to block. But I think he's going to be able to do some nice things in this pass offense. But Swaim right now is clearly the number one, in my opinion, even though I'm not allowed to talk about depth charts or anything along those lines. I'm not saying he's working as the number one. I'm saying, in my eyes, he's clearly the number one. Did you understand the difference there, LeVay?
Yeah.
I don't want to be fined by a kangaroo court here at night. I want to specify the difference. He's not listed as one. He's number one in my eyes.
I think you did a pretty good job there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Back to Chris Conley. He just didn't have the ball thrown to him enough. As I said to Nick Foles, he didn't have the at-bats. So now he gets the chance. And he gets the chance here, again, in an offense that was 11 points worse a year ago per game. He comes in where the leader had 66 receptions in Westbrook, and he looks very good. And then there are question marks after question marks after question marks with this wide receiving core. Marquise Lee's on the sideline. Keelan Cole, I believe, has to have an above average to better camp in order to make the team. And then, of course, you have DJ Chark, who I think is off to a very good start as well, but was injured for five games a year ago. The point I'm trying to make, there is a tremendous opportunity here for Chris Conley. And there's a tremendous opportunity here for Chris Conley to do a lot of different things in John DeFilippo's offense, including stretch defenses. We didn't even see that last year. I mean, all the games that Jacksonville was trailing, how many deep balls did we see each and every Sunday? I mean, I go back to that offensive scheme, and I understand that it was ripped apart because of injuries and no running attack. But they were running fades to Dante Moncrief. You don't run a fade to Dante Moncrief. You don't do that. That's not what he does. And they didn't seem to run any type of long patterns. Now, I know the offensive line couldn't pass protect the way they did 2 years ago, and much of that was because of the injury. And also, Bortles struggled to get the ball downfield, but they didn't even attempt a lot of those plays offensively last year. You got to believe that this year that is going to be part of their makeup. You at least have to take a chance. I don't think defensive backs were on their heels at all last year when they faced the Jaguars. They were all up on their toes, all right, expecting the dinking and the dunking variety of offense. Now, dinking and dunking and short stuff is a huge part of what Nick Foles really wants to do, okay? I asked him about that today, about dinking and dunking and about throwing to backs out of the backfield. Again, this has been the major concern that I have had with the Jaguars offense the entire offseason. I asked Nick Foles about that today.
Flip said earlier that he's taken some backs and taking them out of their comfort zone when it comes to catching the football. Not a lot of career receptions in the backfield. How has that gone so far, throwing the backs?
They've done a good job. I mean, the backs got to realize, I can't tell you where the ball is going before the play snaps. I can't tell you. I have an idea in my brain, but I still have to read and react and play what the defense does. So there's times where the backs are going to get a lot of balls. If you look at the history, I like getting the ball to the back at different times. They're a huge part of the offense. Getting them out in a five-man pro, getting them in an empty formation. Hey, if their protection check doesn't come, getting them out so we have another guy down there. If we check it down, you got to get the first down. So they've really done a good job. Once again, it's a great start.
I never heard Blake Bortles say that. And this isn't pick on Blake Day. I love Blake. If he was here right now, we'd each drink a six-pack. Nick Foles comes right out and says, I don't know where the ball's going. I find that remarkable. I can't explain what goes on inside the head of a quarterback. I never played the position at any level. I have no idea what it means. But like the great Jaguar fans out there that are listening. Not those that when you go to the game, you're trying to pick up chicks and you're drilling beers and you're off and you don't even have any idea if you're running or passing. I'm talking about the really, really good football fans. First and 10, second and 7, third and 2. You know in your head, you're believing what the team is going to do. This is a run situation. This is a pass situation. To hear Nick Foles just say he doesn't know where the ball is going is really new to me around here. I can't remember the last time I've ever heard anything like that, because what does the average NFL play last? It lasts around 5 seconds. And even though we always talk about going through your progressions and how defensive backs and linebackers and safeties will read a quarterback's eyes. And we know how the great quarterbacks can lead a safety in one direction and throw in another and fool him with his eyes. I understand looking at your primary target and then looking at your second option and then maybe your third option is a dump down to a back. But I've always truly believed that in that second to second and a half, 2 second period, you know where that ball is going. At least that's the way I've always kind of looked at football. Maybe you just heard what Nick Foles said, and it totally registers with you, and you get it. Because I'm just having a little bit of trouble identifying with that. You know, let's say he's got two wide receivers and a guy in a slot, and he's got a back behind him. And he takes the snap, and he looks at his primary wide receiver, and he's not open. Well, at that particular point, he's going to look what? At the second wide receiver, and it's not open. But does he in his own mind believe, all right, if the primary guy is not open, I'm not going to my second guy. I'm going to the dump down back because I'm not going to have enough time. Or can he really go 1, 2, 3, 4? Even though we talk about it all the time, I just don't know if quarterbacks are really able to do that. I mean, you look back on what Blake Bortles did. Did he really read through all of his progressions? It seemed like Blake was back there and he had to take the ball, and after a couple of seconds, he had to tuck and he had to either carry it upfield or he was flushed out of the pocket or he was forced to throw the football away. And there were a lot of times last year, 55, that he threw the ball to T.J. Yeldon. Sometimes I overdo things. Sometimes I overread things. Just the answer. That's what I'm trying to get at today. I thought that was outstanding. I really felt that way about Nick Foles, about his ability to actually come to the line of scrimmage and not know where the ball is going. That, you know, I don't know. I believe him totally, but I guess I'm a little mystified by it. Maybe you're not. Maybe the really good football fans out there can totally relate. If you want to comment on that, please, 641-1010, teach me a lesson. Maybe I'm just used to bad quarterback play around here. And, you know, this is something to look forward to in a very positive way as this football team moves forward. All right, more coming up on Nick Foles. We'll get to his comments as well on backside of the backfield. John DeFilippo talks about that as well. That's coming up. We got a lot to do. We're staying on the Jaguars offense in our very first hour. Glad you're with us into the night with Rick Ballew continues.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we got a 9 o'clock tonight. Denny Thompson and James Coleman will take over at that particular point. Tomorrow, day three. And should be an interesting day tomorrow as well. I think camp early on has shown a lot of interesting things. I mean, I know you still have your questions, some of which we cannot, discuss at this point. Doug Marone's going to speak tomorrow at 10:15. I have a feeling that we're going to get a lot more on Friday because he is going to try to be put on the record for a couple of things. You know, like, for instance, I still can't tell you who the starting left tackle is right now. I can't tell you that. I can't tell you who the starting will linebacker is right now until it gets put on the record. I have a feeling the answer to those two questions we'll know tomorrow at about 10:15. Just a sneaky suspicion, because obviously those questions will be asked. After the workout, Terry Rybiski and Leonard Fournette. You know, Leonard Fournette's really looked the part. And you just heard Nick Foles talk about throwing to backs. And he went on and discussed, he heard the comment about 5 minutes ago, it was actually a question I asked about throwing to the backs. And it was Nick Foles who answered that by saying, if you know anything about my career, that's really part of what I do. My game, throwing to the backs, throwing to the tight end. I'm wondering aloud and have for a number of days now, do the Jaguars have someone who can catch the ball out of the backfield? Leonard Fournette has looked pretty good doing that so far. Not perfect. And I wouldn't expect him to be perfect. It's not his forte for Leonard Fournette. I think he is a much better running back who runs the football than a running back who catches the ball out of the backfield. But I think the work is being put in to make him better at that. Can he be a true three-down back? Who is the third-down back? Some school of thought right now is that it's Benny Cunningham, who hasn't even had an opportunity to practice. The guy who's turned my head the most so far has been Thomas Rawls. Yet there's been others out there who know the game very well who have told me you're wrong. He's not going to be their third down back. That leaves Alfred Blue. It's certainly not NyQuil Armstead. He's a downhill two-down mutter. All right, big back, wear you down type of back. But I find that a little bit interesting right now. Let's grab a few of these calls. That's not the one I was looking for. It was ripping me. And again, if you rip me, I'm typically going to read it. It's because I'm really an insecure guy, and I do this about rips towards me to try to prove to you that I'm not insecure. Yet really it means that I am. The 0529 says, they might fine you for referencing the wrong college for Josh Oliver. I believe I said Murray State. Of course, that would have been the other third round draft pick who I spoke with a week ago, Quincy Williams. He went to Murray State. Quincy Williams did. Of course, San Jose State is the college I should have referenced for Josh Oliver. Speaking of tight ends, tomorrow out of Texas in his fifth year, Jeff Swaim, going to get an opportunity to talk with him. You get a one-on-one with Jeff Swaim. That'll be part of the program coming up on Friday night. All right, in the meantime, let's grab a few of these phone calls. Let's go to Steve, who is next, as we go into the night with Rick Ballew. How you doing, Steve?
How you doing, Ricky?
Good, Steve.
Hey, when you're talking about Foles having the 5 seconds when he drops back, you know, you're counting. You remember, he's already looked over the defense too, so I believe that makes the process a little bit faster. You know, by looking at the defense, he knows he might not even look at one person. if the defense is looking that way.
Sure. I mean, listen, you call a play, and a lot of these plays now are no huddle, or, you know, you run from a shotgun, and you have all the pre-snap movement that, you know, his wide receivers will do, and obviously you're focusing in on where the mic is defensively and all the defensive changes that your opponent is making. But, you know, during that time where you're setting up and you've called the play, and then that ball is being snapped to you, it amazes me that a quarterback can honestly, in that short period of time, really believe that a ball can go three or four different places. Even though they read projections, or protections and go through their progressions, I've always been one of those who believes you're basically looking at your primary wide receiver, and if he's not open, you're looking for your check down, which is usually a tight end or a back.
Right.
But who knows? I mean, I'm going to believe him. The man has won a Super Bowl, and, you know, I just haven't heard that answer. I guess what I'm trying to say here, Steve, is that, you know, going through Byron Leftwich and David Garrard and Blaine Gabbert and Blake Bortles and Chad Henne and, you know, Kessler, every quarterback that this team, I've never heard that answered the way that Nick Foles did today.
It was pretty detailed.
It was. I loved it. I thought it was good. Thanks for getting in. Appreciate the call. You know, that's kind of more of what I'm getting at here is that, you know, I've been doing this for a few years now, and, you know, we talk about canned answers or lip service or cliches. We're all going to get them. But it's not too often that you get something that is a little authentic. That is a little different. Blake was the greatest. He really was, because he took every punch. Blake never blamed anyone else. And he was quick to point out that it was his fault. But it was also a lot of coach speak, player speak, expected type of answers, if that makes any sense. I don't think you went into a Blake Bortles press conference, whether it was during camp or after a game, whether it be a win or a loss, and you ever really got any shock value from him either way. I think he, again, took every punch and never threw it on others. I mean, it wasn't Ben Roethlisberger here or, you know, Aaron Rodgers, and granted, those quarterbacks have three Super Bowl rings. Okay, but those are two come to mind because of some just some things that have gone on this year with those two quarterbacks and their teams. Okay, Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, you know, everything that happened there with Mike McCarthy, some wide receivers. Obviously, we don't need to go through the Ben Roethlisberger situation once again. I'm just trying to give you the difference in my opinion between these two. You know, I want to play one comment here, but actually, let's say that to the top of the hour. We'll say that with John DeFilippo to the top of the hour and reset everything for you coming up at 8 o'clock and spend more on this offense. We'll do that coming up in just a couple of minutes. Again, I do want to remind you that tomorrow will be their third and final work this week. And, you know, it'll be interesting because, you know, Josh Allen signed today, but has the bruised knee and didn't work today with the football team. I am under the impression that he is not going to be able to work with the football team tomorrow. I think one of the bigger issues that we'll try to uncover early on tomorrow with Doug Marrone is what's going on now with Marcell Dareus. Okay, he was not at practice today, and there wasn't any type of injury talk whatsoever with Marcell Dareus. I will say this, that when John DeFilippo spoke today, right before practice started, Doug Marrone came out and spent about 5 minutes with the media. And the reason why he spoke was to talk about Josh Allen. He wanted to be the man sending the message. He's the head coach. He didn't want this city freaking out. He certainly didn't want the media to freak out. And what is the media there for? To send the message about the team to you, the Jaguar fans. If all of a sudden the media starts tweeting out, Josh Allen's not here today, and all of a sudden you someone says, well, you know, he's got a bruised knee. If you're tweeting out Josh Allen's not practicing today, he's got a bruised knee, or he's got a knee, this city starts freaking out. Doug Marrone gets ahead of it. And Doug Marrone tells us that. He says, listen, we're being cautious with this. He's got a bruised knee. We're not going to push him. We're going to work him on the side today. He's not going to do any individual drills or team drills. And that's just the way it is. And he went on to say, if it was anyone else, we'd be in the exact same situation. We're not doing this specifically because he's the top draft pick. Anyone else in this situation, the same thing would have happened. But I thought it was good that Doug Marrone did that. Now, the one thing we did not find out is Marcell Dareus, and you know, or Marcell Dareus. And with Marcell Dareus, I haven't really sensed any panic yet. It may be simply he had a personal day. A veteran personal day. He had something planned. I have no idea what it could be. I mean, I'm not even sure if he has a family or if he has kids. You have graduations and things going all throughout Jacksonville. I have no idea what it is. I tend to believe that if it was something that was even remotely cautious, like it was with Josh Allen and the bang knee, we would have heard about it today. So therefore, I'm under the impression that it was just a day off, personal day. Again, it's still voluntary. Maybe he just decided to take a day. I don't know. But I think we'll know tomorrow at 10:15. That's one of the many things that I believe we're going to find out tomorrow when it comes to the conversation with Doug Marrone. That's just my guess. I think you'll find out about the left tackle tomorrow. That's just my guess. I think you'll find out about the Will linebacker tomorrow. That's just my guess. Should I write the script for the questions that need to be asked? I know, because I'm going to ask the questions, and I know the media will in general anyway. Okay, these questions will be asked tomorrow. We'll be talking about these three things during Friday night's show. Tonight, though, let's stay with the offense. Coming up next, John DeFilippo. Is as impressed with him today as I was with Nick Foles. Really. Like the makeup of this young man, John DeFilippo. Honestly, I had heard that he had had head coach written all over him, and then you had the mess in Minnesota. I thought he made a real good first impression today meeting the Jacksonville media, and he was very animated on the sideline. Okay? A guy not afraid to get after it. I'll explain. That's coming up in hour number two with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, it's 8 o'clock in Jacksonville. Glad you're with us. My name is Rick Ballew, the show produced by Matt LeVay. Not as hot today as yesterday. A little bit of cloud coverage.
Yeah, this heat is killing me, Rick. I'm not ready for summer. Absolutely not.
Bring it on. How do you think I stay so svelte?
I mean, I can't even walk outside without being drenched in sweat.
You know what I've done every day after practice? I take the little pilgrimage in the Key GMC Sierra 1500, totally jacked up on steroids. That is the truck, not me. Great folks over there at Key. And I make the trip over to the other side. I'm not even sure what road it is. And I make the walk all the way underneath the Fuller Warren Bridge, all the way out towards, like, where the train goes over the St. John's, that old rusty bridge. I don't know what that walkway is called.
That's not on my mind at the moment. I don't know.
You know?
I'm trying to think of it, but I can't
remember. Yeah, I've done it, but it's a good walk. That's really, I have, like, no complaints about Jacksonville. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Not a one, except for this. Not a lot of great places to walk in Jacksonville. I'm a walker. I am. I like to work up a lather. I like to get out and walk. And that's one thing that Jacksonville, in my opinion, is kind of like. I'm open for suggestions, but, you know, typically I go to Michler's. Walk the beach. That's always a lot of fun. And when I'm out and I cover the Jags and I have a little bit of downtime, if I have 45 minutes to an hour to kill, I'll go take that walk there. And today was great. It was it felt like it was 10 degrees cooler today at Jaguars practice because there was some cloud coverage today. And there was a little bit of a breeze. It's still hot, but it's not nearly as hot as it's going to get. And that practice field, man, you just bake. That is in the middle of it, and there is no shade out at the practice facility. I think it's Dreamfinders. I should know the name of it. I've only been the sideline reporter now for 7 years and haven't missed one of these workouts yet. But some will say I'm a late learner. All right, let's get a couple of these phone calls rolling because John DeFilippo is getting set to join us, or at least I did talk with him earlier today. The media did, and we have some reaction that we want to share from him today. I think you come away pretty impressed as to what he had to say. Let's grab a couple of these calls. Let's kick it off by going to Zach, who's with Rick Ballew. How you doing, Zach?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Zach.
Hey, all right. I wanted to make some comments on Nick Foles.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think he's going to be really good for this football team on and off the field. First off, off the field, I mean, you said a couple days ago, Monday, that you saw him spending 10 minutes after everybody was already in the locker room talking with the wide receivers. He didn't have to do that. I mean, he's extremely new to this football team. Like you said, he could have been one of those high first guys like Antonio Brown probably is and just thinks his ego is above everybody else's because he's already won a Super Bowl. But no, he came in and he's talking to everybody, trying to coach everybody up. And trying to learn from them as well. And I think that's amazing. I don't remember Blake Bortles ever doing that, or at least it wasn't reported, like it's being on Nick Foles.
No, Blake did do that. I don't remember it being done this way because this was the very first time that we saw Nick Foles. It was his first practice. Remember, it was a little bit different for Blake where, you know, he came in as a first rounder, but he wasn't the starter. It was Henny. And then Henny just sucked. He couldn't throw a ball downfield. Everything he picked up and threw was batted down at the line of scrimmage. And Bortles was probably forced in there before his time. But, yeah, as I've said many times over now, Zach, I have been totally surprised in a very good way by everything I've seen from Nick Foles, including that particular situation that he did during that first workout. That continued today. It wasn't as lengthy. But he talked with a few other guys today, including, you know, stood back and talked with John DeFilippo today after practice for just a couple of minutes. But you know what it's like that when that bell goes and the practice is over and if you're running for the locker room to grab a shower and you can't wait to get out of there, I think that is reflective on the rest of the team. But guys who stick around for a few moments later and try to, you know, take the extra mile, if you will, I think that really shows a lot when it comes to leadership. Appreciate your call. And he has done that. All right, let's get to John DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator. Today he had an opportunity for the first time to meet the Jaguars. And, you know, to meet the Jaguars media, I should say. And, you know, I thought he handled himself in a very encouraging way. You know, this is a brutal business. And you know, he was fired last year, 13 games in. Go back to the end of 2017, okay? Doug Peterson's the coach, has an uncanny ability to try to win the game. I think the one criticism that we go back on to the 2017, January of 2018 AFC Championship game is that the Jaguars were way too conservative in Foxborough. Tried to hold on to a lead. You know, those last four possessions, all three and outs. They didn't try to win it, some will say. Philly tried to win it 2 weeks later in the Super Bowl. And they won the game 41-33, but they went for it on fourth down. Some trickeration. Doug Peterson was looked at as a genius. Frank Reich gets a job, as we know, as the offensive coordinator. Well, on the same lines, all of a sudden, bam, there goes, you lose your quarterback coach and John DeFilippo. He goes to run the offense in Minnesota. He gets fired after 13 games. They're not running the football enough in Minnesota. There's a difference in the philosophy in Minnesota than the fall guys, John DeFilippo. Well, he approaches the media today. He says all the right things. You can't help but look at this guy and say, wow. I mean, he gets it. He looks the part. He sounds the part. There was talk that this guy was making the run to become a future NFL head coach. Okay, he took a step back after the firing. Much like the players that we talk about all the time who are trying to prove it, improve it years. John DeFilippo right now is absolutely in a prove-it situation. You know what the best-case scenario would be for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Is John DeFilippo to be gone in a year or two. You know why? Because that means he completely turned around this offense and that this offense is putting up points like they did a couple of years ago. And even back then, they did not score a ton of rushing touchdowns. I guess Fournette had a pretty decent year. I'm thinking a little bit before that. But they scored a lot with their defense. They, you know, they managed some gains. They were number one in rushing. They didn't have enough passing passing touchdowns a couple of years ago under Blake Bortles. I would expect many more under Nick Foles. But that's a best-case scenario for John DeFilippo and the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's for him to turn around this offense so much that he's being looked upon as a head coach in a couple of years. We'll see what happens. John DeFilippo today asked several things, including, well, the offensive drop. It's a question that I asked about the points being dropped by, just a huge amount, nearly 11 points per game. I still can't believe that this actually came into play in the difference of 2017 and 2018. Here's my question to the new offensive coordinator.
When you went back and looked at last year's tape, from 17 to 18, they dropped off 11 points a game scoring. Mm-hmm. Have you ever evaluated anything and seen such a drastic drop-off?
Well, you know, I know this. Unfortunately for this team last season, from what I understand and what I watched on tape, there was an exorbitant amount of injuries on this football team, especially on the offensive side of the ball and at unique positions. So, again, I that's what I noticed as an outsider. So, but I noticed there are also still a lot of really good football players on this team. So our job is to get the best 11 out there that gives us the best chance to win.
All right. So, you know, I think he answered it about as well as he could. He didn't want to throw anyone under the bus. He also didn't want to come out and obviously say, well, there's not talent on this football team. And, truthfully, that was the primary reason why this offense struggled the way that they did in 2018. You had way too many injuries. Along the way, they understood, and I say they, meaning Tom Coughlin and David Caldwell, that Blake Bortles was no longer the answer. All right? And they gave him that extension, and that ended up being a mistake. But that was all part of the equation. You know, I guess we'll never really know the answer to the question. What if that offensive line stayed healthy? Right? What if Austin Seferian Jenkins had stayed healthy? What if Marquise Lee had stayed healthy? How much better could this football team have been if Leonard Fournette didn't punch a guy at the goal line and they scored? Would Nate Hackett have held on to his job? Would Blake Bortles have held on to his job? These are questions we'll never know the answer to. Can't rewrite history, but it does make you wonder. John DeFilippo on running backs. Again, this is my primary concern with this football team. I asked him about it today.
When you went back and looked, big part of what he's done is throwing the tight ends and backs. You don't have a lot of career catches with running backs here.
Sure.
Are you concerned about that, and do you have a third down back?
Well, you know, I think we're in the process of finding that out. It's hard. I wouldn't say it's hard, but it's a little bit difficult because we don't have the pads on, and a big part of being a third down back is protection. And so, you know, the unique protections that and blitzes that guys are bringing nowadays out of the three down stuff and those odd overloads and things of that nature. So I think as we go along here, I think that will come to fruition. We've brought some guys in from other places, and we've drafted a young man, and everyone's going to get a shot to be that third down back. But to your point about catching the football, we're getting those guys out there early. And I don't want to say we're force feeding it, but we're forcing those guys out of their comfort zone a little bit than maybe what they've been used to get them used to seeing if they can do that, do those jobs.
Love that answer. Getting them out there early, forcing them out of their comfort zone. Okay? There is not a lot of catches in this backfield right now. Thomas Rawls has looked real good doing this so far. I think he's looked the best of the bunch. Ryquell Armstead, I saw catch a ball the other day. You can make the case it may have been the first career catch he's ever had. Okay? I mean, he is the consummate two-down back. Go back and read the scouting reports on Ryquell Armstead. He may be the farthest thing from a third-down back in professional football. Benny Cunningham's an interesting story because he's not 100% right now. He's working on the side. But he was basically forgotten a year ago and caught one football. So I don't know. He's a special teams guy. Is he a third down back? Let's hope. Let's hope that he can become that guy. Again, Thomas Rawls is the one that has impressed me most. But I was told no. Looks like he can catch the ball. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know how Thomas Rawls is in blitz pickup. If he's asked to stay in and chip. If he's asked to stay in and block. I do not know if that is a strong point for Thomas Rawls. But Flip mentioned it. Part of being a third down back is the ability to stay in and pass protect. Alfred Blue, I just haven't seen anything yet. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying it's good. What I'm saying is that there's 90 people out there, and I have two eyes. I just haven't seen anything yet out of Alfred Blue. Leonard Fournette, to me, has looked really, really, really good at 228 pounds. I think he's shown up, and he looks the part. And I expected it. Outside of the stupidity of the driving, I expected this out of Leonard Fournette. He speaks to us tomorrow, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. That'll be after practice on Friday. All right, much more to get into, including Truth Teller news and notes. Let's do that as we continue to get into a Thursday night with Rick Belew.
Into the Night with Rick Belew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Tonight's show brought to you by Advanced Disposal. They are hiring right now in Clay County. You need a CDL, that is a commercial driver's license. $1,500 signing bonus right there for you. Very, very, very good pay and outstanding benefits. And it's a great company. I play golf with a bunch of folks from Advanced Disposal lately, including the mangler, Greg Huntington, one of the 10 original Jags. And really enjoyed it. It was a fun round. But good people, and just learn more about the company. A signing bonus available, $1,500. They need drivers right now today in Clay County. Apply online. Go to AdvancedDisposal.com/careers. AdvancedDisposal.com/careers. Get the Truth Teller news and notes. Brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. Great people. The All-Star, or I guess the All-NBA teams have been announced. Maybe the biggest story is that the King is on the third team. You know, Giannis and Jokic, George, Harden, and Curry are on the first team. Why do I believe, LaVey, that the second team could beat him? Lillard, Irving, Durant, Leonard, and Embiid.
I mean, that's a pretty good roster right there.
Be interesting to see. Now, you can go to that whole Durant-Curry argument that it doesn't matter if Durant's playing or not. I mean, Curry's like, what, 32-2 lifetime without him? It's pretty incredible. And Irving certainly fell apart in Boston this year and proved he's not a leader. Leonard's just out of this world. And Damian Lillard's a good basketball player. Joel Embiid, you know, maybe conditioning, at least if you listen to Charles Barkley, but he left it all on the court when Leonard beat him with that baseline J. We'll see. Game 5 tonight coming up. That is in about 15 minutes. Should be an interesting one tonight. Milwaukee favored by 7.5. Your total is 215. Toronto visits Milwaukee, the beer city. I love Milwaukee. I love the city. It's a great football town. I think everyone looks at it as a football town, even though it's next door in Green Bay and obviously Madison. But downtown Milwaukee's got that blue-collar look. And it's one of the baseball yards, Miller Park. You know, when I was young and my kids were being born, I was married at the time. My wife and I would always do the Wrigley Field deal. But when we wanted to take the kids, we go to the brand-new stadium, you know, because kids crawl on floors and do all that type of stuff. And that Miller Park was just out of this world. I love downtown Milwaukee. And it's a pretty good basketball town as well with Marquette. And the Bucks have been longing for a championship for years and years and years and years. And we'll see if they can get it. Giannis against Kawhi Leonard tonight. Game 5 coming up. Milwaukee favored by 7.5 points. Gerald McCoy began his tour today visiting the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland is an amazing story. I mean, they're putting together just a who's who of phenomenal talent. But I just don't know if they're going to be able to coexist. And I know that they have become kind of the story that everyone is gravitating towards. For one reason, I can't control it. It's just my body and my mind, all as one, is really going against the grain here. I don't know why. I just want to see Cleveland fail again. And I'm not even sure why that is. But I feel that way. All right, the Jaguars were mentioned by Schefter for Gerald McCoy. There hasn't been a peak, or anything has leaked as far as that. But a lot of teams have been mentioned. The Colts, the Patriots, the Saints, the Falcons, the Bengals as well. McCoy is 31 years of age. He visited Cleveland a little bit earlier today. You know, odds came out as well for the AFC South. This is from Odd Shark. Patriots plus 325 to the dollar. Best odds to win the AFC, to go to the Super Bowl. You don't understand what 325 to the dollar means. You lay down $100 and the Patriots make it to the Super Bowl, you win back $325. Chiefs plus 400. The Browns plus 600. This is why these casinos keep growing in the sand like a flower. Every time I go to Vegas, they're bigger and they're bigger and they're bigger. It's because the stupidity of the general public. Who the hell would ever vote on the Cleveland Browns to make it to the Super Bowl? They're plus 600. And if they're plus 600, you know what that means? They're generating some dollars in Las Vegas. Colts are plus 700. The Chargers plus 750. Steelers plus 1,100. Then it's the Jaguars, Texans, and Ravens at plus 1,600. I was asked earlier today, where were the Jaguars a year ago? I honestly don't remember. I don't think they were as high as Cleveland, though, plus 600. I want to say the Jaguars were like maybe third or fourth in the AFC after their AFC championship game and the expectations. But I don't think the odds were as high as plus 600. If anyone remembers that or can dig that up for me, please send it to me. 641-1010 on Twitter or on the text line. Or you can grab me as well on Twitter, Baloo1010XL. Just for the sake of the Dolphins, they're plus 8,000. Again, if you don't know what that means, you can go to the window right now in Las Vegas and put $100 down on the Miami Dolphins to go to the Super Bowl. Not to win it, to go to the Super Bowl. And you would get back $8,000. $8,000. That is how you make your money, by finding interesting things to wager on. The NFL Scouting Combine is going to return to Indianapolis and through the year 2021, but as early as next year in 2020, they're going to make a lot of these events primetime. Let's face it, this is the next thing. The NFL draft has already completely taken off. We spent some time on that yesterday. The 2020 NFL draft is in Vegas, and they announced some future sites, Cleveland in 2021 and Kansas City in 2023. They have yet to announce 2022. But when you have 600,000 people showing up like you had this past April in Nashville, and you had three networks show it, and the ratings were good, the Combine is next. Combine has always been interesting because I've been to a few of them. You work the room where the players come in and interview, and they'll sit with you on Radio Row, and you can watch some forms of, let's say, weightlifting and some drills. But for the most part, everything is inside the football stadium, and the media has no access. We actually watch those workouts like you do on television. They're talking now about making them primetime and eventually moving them to a more attractive part of the country than Indianapolis in the month of February. It's got the NFL written all over it, right? You know they want to put it in L.A. You know they want to put it in Las Vegas. You know they want to put it somewhere where the weather is nice and it looks good as far as the eye test. Sorry, that doesn't work in Indianapolis. So on-field drills will shift to afternoon and prime time beginning next year in Indianapolis. Tiger Woods officially commits to the Memorial, which is a few weeks away. That has been expected. He typically plays Jack's event. We all know that he has been second-guessed for not playing an event after he won the green jacket at Augusta and elected not to play for an entire month before the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black. He's going back to Pebble Beach, where he won the where I watched him win the United States Open. It was the first U.S. Open I ever covered. Back in the year 2000 there at Pebble Beach, was simply out of this world. And he's had a lot of success on this course. He did not play the regular PGA Tour event, which was this past February. Tiger, along with Brooks Koepka, who hasn't played out there since 2016. So odds-wise, there's one in two along with Dustin Johnson. Well, Koepka and Tiger didn't play this past February. I'll have to look back on DJ to see if he played earlier out there. Honestly, I do not remember. Six in a row for the Marlins. You heard me correctly. The Miami Marlins have won six straight. Unbelievable. David Levin, who's covers the Jags with Black and Teal, and had him on the radio show. He's a big wrestling guy as well. Also covers the Marlins and does nice work with minor league baseball. I was at a discussion with him today about the farm system for the Miami Marlins. And, you know, obviously we've seen a lot of good players come through and pitch and play for the Shrimp. But their AA and their AAA, they got some really good prospects. Their minor league operation is flourishing. So I think baseball needs it in this state. I don't know how much that will affect the attendance down south. It's just awful in Miami, but they're playing some good baseball. Six in a row right now for the Marlins. Today they get a grand slam from Garrett Cooper to win that game in Detroit. Finally, it's tough to believe that 20 years ago today, Owen Hart died in the ring. The WWF, which turned into the WWE, there's been a lot of dark days in the company's entertainment business. And that can be said, really, as I'll compare it to a sport, it's comparable to any sport where there have been some awful days. This is perhaps the worst. Him falling from the sky. I don't remember exactly how high up he was. I want to say it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 feet. And he fell into the ring, and he died right in the ring. Of course, the brother of the great Bret Hart and they elected to keep the pay-per-view going. Severely criticized for that particular move. So it's been 20 years since the death of Owen Hart. I had no idea. I mean, it's just one of those deals where someone asks you something and then put a year on it or put years on it. If you had asked me about Owen Hart today, I would have said 10 years ago. Honestly, 20 years. Wow. Just blew me away when I saw that this morning. There you go. News and notes brought to you by truckcrashlaw.com. What a sad story that must have been. I mean, I just can't imagine what it would be like to be in public for an event like that. I'm just trying to think of one of the crazy events that I've seen live. You know, either way, has something. You know, I remember being in Chicago on a way to a game when it was announced that Daryl Kyle was found dead in his hotel room in Chicago, and they canceled that series between St. Louis and Chicago. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that even comes close to that as far as, like, the shock value. And that was a, you know, that was a message that came out before the game. I'm trying to think in game. And I was there when Dale Earnhardt died. And obviously I left the race. I had no clue until 45 minutes, an hour or longer after the game. I don't even know if there's one that comes close to that. But can you imagine that, though? Being there and seeing someone fall like that and die right in the middle of the ring. And then they go on as if, okay, let's get it together and let's continue on. Major mistake by wrestling, going back 20 years. Rest in peace, Owen. All right, we got a lot more to do. Let's get to some college football. I'm wanting to do this for a couple of days. I just haven't had the opportunity. Kirby Smart gets it. Georgia gets it. All right? If you don't know what I'm talking about, good. I'll explain. That's coming right up.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Back at 9 o'clock tonight, James Coleman, Denny Thompson getting ready to get on in here. Jaguars practice again tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun on Friday. Doug Marrone at 10:15, Terry Rubisky, Leonard Fournette at 12:45. I also have an interview scheduled with Jeff Swaim, who's looked real good so far. The offense has really looked impressive. D.D. Westbrook came in today and had a couple of really nice grabs. D.J. Chark, who I spoke with on Tuesday, has really looked good in a couple of days. Thomas Rawls has looked good to me as a back. Leonard Fournette has looked good to me as a back. I think those are the only guys who really stick out for me on the offense. You know, did a couple of nice things today is Michael Walker out of Boston College, a rookie. Faster than perhaps I thought he was. Very, very far away. This isn't a Jack Del Rio run camp. That's for sure. Jack used to do everything right on that first field, right by the stands. Plenty of media access. This was done a little bit differently. And that's good. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's different. But Michael Walker, C.J. Board made a really impressive grab during the first OTA. But Michael Walker, I enjoyed watching today. So, you know, just a couple of names. We'll see. You've had undrafted free agents make the wide receiving core over the last half decade. Keelan Cole 2 years ago, Allen Hurns. Going back to that draft class when they brought in Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee as draft picks. So it's happened before. We'll see what ends up happening. Mike Elko now joins a $2 million coordinator club in the SEC. All right. Joins Kevin Steele at Auburn, Dave Aranda at LSU. I just love how Texas A&M keeps pumping money into their program. They're never going to be better than the third best team in the SEC West. It's not going to happen. And I don't care if Jimbo Fisher gets eight calls in overtime like he did in that 74-72 game against LSU. It's just not going to happen. And once they do get good, if they do get good, then Jimbo will leave you. All right? This isn't scorned lover talk. This is the truth. Texas A&M, the next time they win anything will be the first time they've won anything in more than 50 years. I mean, if there was ever a pretender in the world of college football, its name is Texas A&M. And if they start knocking off Mississippi State, Mississippi, LSU, and Auburn, and dare I say, even get into the same conversation as Bama, Jimbo's gone. He's going to leave that ass so fast. There's not a chance he stays at Texas A&M. He's a Kardashian. Always has, always will be. Georgia, unfortunately for them, they would be considered a pretender by many. They haven't won a natty in coming up on 40 years. Athlon, as I said, I read them off and they do a nice job covering college football. No surprise, Clemson number one, Bama two. These are the four they have going to the playoff. Clemson one, Bama two, Michigan three, whatever, Georgia four. Greg McGarrity, former, did some things in Florida, been the AD at Georgia now for, as I just got into Owen Hart, I thought that would have been 10 years, it was 20. How many years has Greg McGarrity been the AD now at Georgia? It's probably like 7 or 8 years. Because you had asked me, I would have said like four. It's probably double that now. It's only Florida State who changes their athletic director each and every year. I thought it was funny, LeVay. I really did. I thought it was funny. Asked about an eight-team college. Oh, excuse me. Kirby Smart and Greg McGarrity were asked by Dennis Dodd recently, why do you continue to schedule all these difficult non-conference opponents? If you haven't heard, UGA now, future non-conference games against Florida State, Texas, Clemson, Notre Dame, UCLA. Of course, they always have Georgia Tech on their schedule. Ask that question. Well, in unison, both McGarrity and Kirby Smart said, because we believe the future of college football will include an eight-team playoff. Genius! I love that answer. That's the best answer I've heard in college football in years. It makes total, complete sense. And I'm glad that one of the founding fathers, because it all starts and it all ends in the SEC. And every time this argument is raised, you hear about the possibility of an elimination of the conference championship game and the presidents and the athletic directors from the SEC lose their mind. Well, the SEC just spoke here, and Georgia just spoke. And they were left at the altar a year ago. And they nearly won it 2 years ago. That thriller against Oklahoma, which gets me to some of the hard heads in the world of college football who cover the sport. If you could go back to Twitter and the soundboard that came out after the semifinals a year ago, there were people who were tweeting and saying, college football doesn't need an eight-team playoff. They shouldn't even have a four-team playoff. Let's go back to the old system. There's only two really good teams. That's Clemson and Alabama. The worst mistake that you can make is to overreact based on 1 year. Did those people not even watch the Georgia-Oklahoma semifinal game the year prior to that? It's beyond stupidity. That's what's wrong with certain people in my profession. You can't overreact based on one Final Four. Look at the Oklahoma-Georgia game the year before. It was one of the greatest football games that we had ever seen. We never would have had that if you just had two teams going. Oh, a number eight's never going to beat a number one. A number seven's never going to be. How do you know that? At least you'll create interest. At least there'll be excitement. Look at the bowl schedule they announced today. I mean, really, who cares about these bowl games? Unless it's your alma mater or you're betting on the games. It just doesn't matter anymore. I'm glad that there are bowl games for one reason and one reason only. I think it's great for the program to win a game and then move on to their offseason. It's the only sport where you can do that. Watching the NBA Finals, guess what? Every team's going to lose in the NBA. The NHL Finals, every team's going to lose on ice, except for one. Same with the hard court. 68 teams enter the NCAA college basketball tournament. 67 of those teams lost to end their year. Not in the bowl system. What do you have now, 44, 48 bowl games? I don't know what it is. I think it's 44. That's 88 teams. 44 bowl games. 44 teams go into the offseason as a winner. Helps recruiting. Yeah, you have early recruiting now, but it helps recruiting. It helps the flow of your program. But it is time for an eight-team playoff. And I get so disgusted with lazy members of the freaking media who will look at the semifinals last year and then form an opinion that says we shouldn't have an eight-team playoff. A four-team playoff isn't even working. God, those people irritate the hell out of me. Do some homework. Go back and study the history of college football. I was talking with Greg Huntington the other day. Penn State had undefeated seasons. They couldn't even play for it. Auburn had an undefeated season. They couldn't even play for it. You want to go back to two? No. Stupid. You move forward to eight. That is what you do. You go from four to eight. Thank you, Georgia. Thank you, Greg McGarrity. Thank you, Kirby Smart. Finally, someone from that conference saying something that makes some sense.
Now, the two-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings have you covered from head to toe and especially stomach. Order your office event or tailgate catering today online at moescateringfl.com.
Denny Thompson is here, all tan, hanging out at Jaguars camp.
Burnt, man. I need that hat you had on today.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I where'd I get one that? Of those. I'm trying to think where I got that. I don't know. I think the GF got it for me somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't go shopping.
Yeah,
I might have got it in the Keys. Nah, you know where I got it?
That
I got
wasn't
it in
the Keys hat, bro.
I got it in Mexico.
Mexico?
Yeah.
Okay.
I came back.
A little crispy on the back of the neck.
I came back with 300 Cuban cigars, a bottle of tequila with a scorpion in it. Not a worm, a scorpion.
Scorpion.
And one of those hats.
All stuffed in the hat?
Just all stuffed everywhere.
300?
I was just kidding. No, I think you're only allowed to bring back... I was told different... When I started getting told different information from different people, I elected to buy fewer.
Yeah.
I think I was told 100, then I was told like 50. I think I brought back 50.
Well, that would last James about three days or
I gave,
so.
I gave Coleman a Cohiba from Medico.
Yeah, today was the worst kind of day because it wasn't that hot, but you still got burnt.
It was. It was a kinder day to be at practice compared to Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I still can't get over, by the way, and we're going to talk about this. I still can't get over the way just Josh Allen looks, physically looks.
Oh, he's a freak.
Grief. Talk about just God being in a great mood on the day he made him.
Yeah, 262 pounds or
no fat on that guy at all. Saw Greg Jones today. I'm gonna tell James a little something about that.
Greg Jones?
Yeah, yeah, he still looks like he could play.
Greg Jones, you ever hear about the Greg Jones Darnell Dockett deal?
Yes.
Yeah, you have? Yes. I remember I had Greg Jones on the air once and I asked him about it. He goes, I don't want to go there.
So we all
soft
saw the
guy, soft spoken guy, but one of the talk about a physical put together.
Oh, that's crazy. All saw Bacella today, but he does not look like he can still play.
No. Tony does not. Yeah, I eat with Tony on the road a little bit. Him and Jeff are they're kind of I'd call them food, not snobs, but like elitists.
Really?
Like they can tell the difference between a great steak in Indianapolis compared to a great steak in New York City, where I'm one of those guys, I can't tell, just give me it and give me a lot of it, and I'm happy.
Yeah.
I can't tell the difference between a great, you know, sirloin in New York City compared. Yep. They can.
Yeah. I don't have the budget anyway that they've got, so I great's out of my price range.
Well, you know, we go out and we eat and we have a fun time, and usually it's 90. I would like to think that it's usually about 100% football talk. But it's not. It's like 50% food talk.
Oh, see, I couldn't do that.
And 50%
now, just
football
let me
talk.
Eat. Just let me eat.
Yeah.
I don't really like to eat with large groups of people. Along my hey, I'm not the, what is it called? The high guy? The what?
The high first guy.
The high first guy,
yeah.
Along that, which I admitted that I am that guy, you're going to tell me high first. I really don't like eating with people.
Okay, so you are a high first guy, and you're also a don't bother me while I'm eating, and I like to eat alone type of guy.
I'll eat with my family, but like if there's a group of 12 people that want to go eat, nah, I'll pass, man. It's just too much going on. Like, it takes too long to get the food. People smack, and that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I just, no, leave me alone. Okay. Let me eat.
I can appreciate that.
I really should just be isolated, shouldn't I?
Sure. Yeah, why not?
I say, based on those two responses, that basically makes you antisocial, right, Denny?
Oh, I'm very much antisocial, Matt.
All right, so what's coming up? Yeah, obviously a lot on the Jags.
Yeah, a lot on the Jags. This interesting, I don't know if you got into this interesting concept that somebody's got for a TV show that's involving NFL players.
I have not.
Okay, we're gonna hit that pretty early. It's pretty stupid that they're participating, but I'm gonna get into it.
Sometimes
anyway.
Stupid works.
I don't think it is in this one.
All right, we'll see. Denny Thompson, right. James Coleman coming up right now. Let's give out a family four pack. Let's give out right now caller number two to tomorrow night's event with Frangie and Company, Walk Off Charities, and LeVay. What this includes? Great restaurants. I've been to it the last couple of years. I obviously am not participating this year because I'll be doing the show. But a four-pack to watch this charity, get an opportunity to get on the field and hit, possibly. But you get to take in all of the food from these tremendous restaurants, and it's all free if you are the second caller at 641-1010. That's 641-1010. Second caller, congratulations. You are the winner. All right, that's going to do it. Tomorrow, Jeff Swaim will join us on the program. You're also going to hear, I'm going to do a one-on-one with Jeff Swaim, one of the newly acquired tight ends. Terry Rabisky speaking tomorrow. Leonard Fournette is speaking tomorrow. And then right out of the gate at 10:15, you're going to get an opportunity to hear from Doug Marrone. So we'll be absolutely filled up and ready to go on Friday night. LeVay's got a winner already, so if you haven't won, don't bother calling anymore because the winner has already been chosen for the family four-pack with Walk-Off Charities coming up on Friday night. Folks, have a great evening. I'll talk to you tomorrow from 7 to 9. My name's Rick Ballew.